All right, my name's Luke. I'm going to be presenting, or well, I'm going to be talking to Daniel Quinby, who's sitting across from me here, about a very special animal that he is hopefully completely unfamiliar with. This is for the Mammalogy final project here. Daniel, do you want to say anything?
Hey, everyone. As Luke said, I'm Daniel Quinby. I'm a senior here in the conservation biology major at Montana State University, and thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. So let's jump right into it. So you don't know what we're talking about yet, right?
Not yet.
Okay. So we're talking about something called the Saiga antelope, which I'm showing him a picture of it right now. I'll describe it to our audio listeners here. Well, I guess there's no other listeners, but it's sort of like if a pronghorn had an elephant trunk. It's got some really weird horns. They don't shed the sheaths like pronghorn do. It's very antelope-y horns. It's got some weird bumps on them. They're just weird-looking creatures.
It looks like something that doesn't belong on this planet.
And it kind of doesn't, but we'll get into that. So, they're pretty unique. They're the only surviving member of genus Saiga. They don't have any fossil record before the Pleistocene. But as far as we can tell, the only changes they've had since the Pleistocene is they used to be a little bit bigger. So they live over in Central Asia. They're in Mongolia, Kazakhstan, Russia. And so a lot of the sources are from the USSR. There's not a lot in English. So it's very hard to dig up a lot. I had to translate a lot.
Okay. Luke, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Why would they have gotten smaller if in the fossil record they were larger? Why are they getting smaller now?
They think it's because of forage quality.
Forage quality.
So they think that with the glacial, like, retreat, there was, I don't know, I guess there was just more to eat back then, and now it's just gotten a little bit drier.
Okay.
And so they're very picky about what they eat. So they'll eat, like, flower buds and, like, the best parts of plants. They won't eat the entire plant. Right. And they move around a lot so that they can keep their forage quality up in a Mongolian steppe, which isn't really notable for having the best forage. So they're very particular about what they eat. And I think the reason they got smaller is because of that. I read in one paper, but there isn't a crazy amount known.
Okay. Could there be some current selection now with this, you know, habitat fragmentation going on, harder to move around for big animals? Do you think there could potentially be some selection for smaller body Saiga?
I really don't think so, because there isn't a lot out there. There's all of the people out there are still mostly nomadic. There's not a lot of infrastructure, not a lot of pressure. I mean, there's really wide open ranges, so I don't know that I would attribute anything to subdivision of lands, of ranges.
Okay.
But yeah, they are pretty small. Even before, when they were a little bit bigger, they are pretty small animals. And so right now they stand at about 80 centimeters high at the shoulder. And like I said, they have that really large nose, which is believed to help warm up the air before it goes into their lungs, because it's pretty cold out there. Only the males have the horns, and they're hunted a lot because the horns are supposed to have medicinal properties.
Wow.
And again, just like pronghorn, they're active. Usually when it's the warm parts of a cold day or the really, like, afternoons and mornings on hot days, they're very, well, not very, but they're pretty temperature sensitive. The reason I picked these or how I heard about these is because I read an article a couple of years ago. I'm not sure how long ago, but they have these crazy, like, population changes, where in the early 50s, they had about 3,000 of them.
Okay.
And then it grew up to 1 million a while later. The 3K was after they were hunted pretty much to extinction. For the horns and for things like that. So there were, like, business hunters coming in and shipping off horns. And so the population fell a lot. There was a lot of regulation preventing hunting.
All right.
And then it shot back up to about 1 million. And then it reduced, even though hunting wasn't allowed again, back to 100K because of disease. And so they get a lot of diseases.
This was a wild population swing by some predator release, those predators being hunters.
Yeah, for a while there. But they were in the millions originally.
All right.
Apparently their populations are supposed to fluctuate a lot. But the main disease that's killing them is pasteurosis now.
Hmm.
And so in the 1971 to 72 season, in the middle of the
Now, Luke,
the
before winter, we get into it, I'm unfamiliar with this disease. Does this cause a pneumonia then?
Yep, so this is actually an infection of the Pasteurella bacteria, and it can occasionally cause that sort of thing. It can cause an infection. And, but yeah, in that 71 to 72 season, 400,000 of them died from that disease alone.
400,000?
Yeah. Wow. And so I'll pull up a picture for you here. They were just chucking them in buckets, and it's happened a bunch of times since then.
For our viewers on audio, these pictures are pretty insane. It looks photoshopped. It's just a prairie with bodies of these antelope littering it.
Yeah.
It looks fake, but
yeah.
Wow.
And they've just dug massive trenches and just filled them.
Now, how does this disease spread from antelope to antelope?
It's contact.
Contact, yeah. Okay.
And so they form these herds of 30 to 40 animals for most of the year. And then when the breeding season comes in, it can be herds of thousands. And so it's very easy for it to spread from animal to animal when there's that much contact.
Interesting. Now, my next question is, what's the natural predator of Saiga antelope?
They don't have a crazy amount of predators. There's not a lot out there that kills them. There's wolves will kill very young animals, but they don't have... There's nothing that's like targeting just them. There's other antelope species out there. But they don't have, there's not a lot of competition. Sometimes if there's like a lot of drought, they'll compete with mice, gazelles, and things like that, because they're usually going for seeds, or like I said, the most nutritious parts of grasses and forbs. So there will be some competition, but no one has found any evidence that it's actually negatively affecting them.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. That kind of explains the huge population swings then.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, wolves don't stick around a lot with ranching communities.
Like yeah.
That, I imagine it's the same in the steppes of Asia.
Yeah, and there's a lot less regulation out there. Yeah. So you can still, well, I don't know how legal it is, but there is definitely harvest of predators. There's still a lot of harvest of Saiga illegally. But yeah, it's mostly disease limited for their population.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. But, I don't know. The disease aspect of it was really what drew me into it. And then I just kept learning about other random things about them. And like I said, there's not a lot of papers on it. So there was one paper from the 70s that was like the first English dude to describe them. And he was just baffled by everything. So the paper's a really fun read because he's just talking about like comparing it to camels and antelope and whatever he can and not being able to come up with anything. Because they're artiodactylids, right?
Okay.
They're bovids, and then they're just their own thing. They're their own genus.
What is their closest living relative?
Something like Ovis, probably. So like Ovis canadensis or something else in there. They do... I mean, like, as far as interrelatedness goes, you can really only compare them to pronghorn in the way they are, because I feel like that's the only thing that even like looks like them or lives like them, those herds especially.
Knowing the size of these creatures, I would definitely describe them as adorable. It looks like a furry pronghorn if you gave it a sock for a nose.
Mm-hmm.
And then its horns would look something like those tubes you whip around and they whistle and they're all corrugated. It looks like if you gave them a corrugated tube antler. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
they're weird as heck, man.
You need to look up a picture. They're impossible to describe.
I'll probably, when I post this, post it with a picture just so that you guys can stare at that. But everything about them is weird. Like the nose, it's supposed to protect the lungs from dust and also warm up the air, but they're not entirely sure about either too much. And then as far as the gut goes, they have a pretty unique gut in like length and shape, but then nobody's done any studies on it, so nobody knows why it's like that. We know what they prefer to eat and what they eat because there was a study in Russia where they strapped a bag to their butts, and they just watch them eat. They had a person standing next to one individual, and then they would have it on a rope, take it out into the middle of a field, and mark down every single bite it took of every single plant for just like an entire day. And they'd figure out diet like that. That's how they figured out the preferences for the more nutritious parts of plants.
That's an amazing study. I've heard a presentation of a similar one that looked at the difference between diets of mule deer and white-tailed deer. Mm. And they had this exact same...
I think they actually got the idea from that. When I was reading it, they said that they were inspired by studies in North America on ungulates out here. So I imagine, depending on how early that study was done, that it was probably pulled off of one.
It was really interesting.
Yeah. It's weird what you can do.
Man.
Yeah, the reproduction is another thing I wanted to tackle. Like most ungulates generally, the females become mature reproductively at 7 to 8 months. Males take about 2 years.
Wow.
And they're polygamous. They form harems usually, 5 to 10, and sometimes up to 50. There are ruts from November to late December. And the funny thing that I always thought is, as much as they die from disease, the males often have such large harems that they die of exhaustion right after the breeding season. And one of the papers I saw was saying that because of how little reliance they have on the amount of males that are in the population, because it's one male up to 50 females, they said that that's probably why the population can skyrocket back every time it falls down, especially with the high turnover of how quickly the females can reproduce and how slowly it takes the males. So it can be as little as 10 to 15% of the population is males by the end of the breeding season.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, can you imagine? It's probably like BYU stats right there.
Now, I'm interested. Do they ever die during the rut from fighting each other? Because as adorable as they are, they have pretty formidable antlers if you were to... They could do some damage. Not antlers, horns.
Yeah, I'm sure... The
horns could do some damage.
I'm sure they do. But again, there isn't a lot of documentation on it. So I'm sure that that exhaustion probably breaks into fighting as well and just protecting the harem.
The other question is, are their birthing rates 50-50?
No. Oh, we're going to get to that too. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, that's actually a great question. I'm very happy I asked that. So pregnancy, I'm just going to go through my list here so that I can get to it. Pregnancy lasts for about 5 months. And then the females will form like maternity groups, and the groups will actually go to the same land year after year. And so Saiga have very high fecundity, and they usually produce twins in the wild.
Wow.
Captive ones tend to only give birth to single offspring. But it says that single offspring formed 70% of births, meaning that 54% of individuals born were not twins in captivity. I think that was a German zoo that did that study. Estrus and gestation weren't tracked well in wild Saiga, and then they were tracked well in captive, but just based off of that previous statistic of not having twins, I don't know how applicable it is. Twins gestate for less time. Yeah, that's just normal. But it is usually more females born than males. And they usually have twins. And so they're built to die and bounce back, I feel like a lot of ungulate species.
So this seems like a natural cycle from everything we can tell about the life history of this animal.
There is some very old stuff from like long, long time ago. Like not Mongolian days, but between that and Europeans coming in and writing things about it, about the population just dipping and increasing like crazy.
Okay. So
it is apparently a natural cycle. It's just a little bit dangerous because there was that bottlenecking in the 50s. And they're worried that if something strong enough comes out, there's not enough variation to just keep things around. But their population is incredibly high. And its high points, it'll swing into the millions area, and then it'll just drop back down to like 200,000, 300.
Wow.
So there's a lot of death there and a lot of birth.
Intense bottlenecking. Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering if there's been any research into inbreeding depression with this species. If it's been bottlenecking for a very long time, there may not be a lot of depression associated with these future bottlenecks.
Right.
Their population size.
That's something that I really wanted to find, but I can't find a paper on it. That the main paper that was discussing the bottlenecking was from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it's 20 years after the event. So I imagine that they had a lot of concerns about it, but they also couldn't do a lot of like genetic testing. And as far as I can tell, nothing has been done since then.
Well, that's definitely a very interesting point of research right there.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a lot of zoo populations, you could look at health effects of...
Yeah. There's a crazy amount of zoos. I know that... I think it was the Cologne Zoo had the best rate of breeding success. But for the most part, a lot of them were unsuccessful.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting right there.
Yeah. Or, well, not as successful. Because they had pretty much all of their ewes bred every year. But yeah, they're crazy animals. I do... I've noticed we're running pretty long here. So I want to play a sound for the audience because we have some calls here. I'm going to try and make this a little bit shorter so that we don't go too long. But because the saiga are in those big groups and because they move around a lot during like the seasons where they're having trouble finding food, they can move around upwards of 50 kilometers a day. The neonates, the newborns, have to be able to run and move around a lot pretty much right after birth.
Okay.
So they have good communication with the parents where the moms can understand or recognize the call of their child and the child can recognize the mother's call pretty much from birth. And so I'm going to play just some random calls from them here. Let's see. It looks like it's looping. Sort of sounds like a video game cow.
It does, or almost reminiscent of a wildebeest.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I guess wildebeest also have that kind of long-looking face.
They do.
That checks out a little bit. But yeah, that's the saiga antelope. They're crazy. We're almost at 20 minutes, so I'm going to try and cut it off maybe exactly at 20 or a little bit earlier. I think we've talked about pretty much everything, but if you have any... We've
talked about a lot. I'm trying to think of...
Any lasting questions.
Other... good questions about the saiga.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously a spot for research is into inbreeding depression.
Yeah. And I'm sure somebody has to be working on that. It's probably just something in Russian that I wasn't able to find online. Because there are a lot of articles in Russian, but they don't show up on, like, Google Scholar.
Yeah.
Something like that. So there's no good way to navigate finding them.
Find that information.
Yeah.
There's a spot right there if you find Russian researchers to collaborate on an English article.
Oh, that'd be a dream project to work on. That'd be very fun to get out there.
Pretty interesting. Yeah. I mean, trying to think of potential ramifications with climate change and expected development in many of these steppe countries.
Right.
Fracturing of habitat. If the species needs to move around a lot for land, that's potentially problematic.
Right. They move around a significant amount. Its minimum is usually like 10 kilometers a day. And they have a large connected swath of land.
Okay.
So at the very least for now, they're not land limited, but we'll see as the countries out there develop more infrastructure and become more populated, how that works out. And we'll see how that conflicts with human interest and of course the poaching and the selling of horns, how that rises. Yeah. But they're an enigmatic species. They're extremely unique, and I encourage everyone at home to look up a picture if I wasn't unable to post one alongside this. And yeah, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.